Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald Review, dated April 12, 2016. We'll begin this portion of the program with a reading of the obituaries. Kathleen K. Sue Brown, 71, passed away at 7:47 p.m. at OSF Richard L. Owens Hospice Home, Peoria, Illinois, on April 10, 2016. A celebration of Kay's life will be held on Saturday, April 23rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Knights of Columbus in Lincoln, Illinois. Memorial donations may be made in Kay's name to OSF Richard L. Owens Hospice Home or the American Cancer Society. Services have been entrusted to Frick Calvert Schrader Funeral Home, Lincoln, Illinois. David L. Buds, longtime pharmacist, businessman, and philanthropist, died on April 9th in the Pena Community Hospital. Those who wish may make donations in his memory to the Community Mission Center, the Pena Library, or a charity of the donor's choice. Funeral services will be Wednesday, April 13th at 10 a.m. in the First United Methodist Church, Pena. Burial will be in Rosemond Grove Cemetery. Visitation will be on Tuesday, that would be today, from 5 to 8 p.m. in McCracken Dean Funeral Home. Julia Ann Berger, 56, of Clinton, Illinois, passed away 3:50 p.m. April 10th at her residence, Clinton, Illinois, surrounded by family. Services will be 10 a.m. Friday, April 15th, at the Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, with Ernie Harvey Jr. and J. Kent Hickerson officiating. Burial will follow at Oak Park Cemetery in Clinton. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 14th, at the Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton. Memorials may be directed to the Clinton Community Educational Foundation. Sandra S. Sandy McKibben, 79, Neoga, died Friday, April 8th. Services 11 a.m. Wednesday, United Presbyterian Church, Neoga. Visitation 4 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, Swengel Odell Funeral Home, Neoga, and 1 hour before services in the church. Burial, Neoga Memorial Cemetery. Memorials, United Presbyterian Church, Habitat for Humanity International, or Donor's Choice. Clarence Lee Pete Phillips, 89, of Menier, Illinois, formerly of Mohammed, passed away on Friday, April 8th, in his home. Memorial service, that is, funeral service, to celebrate Pete's life, will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, April 13th, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, with Reverend Catherine Beckett officiating. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials are suggested to the Menier Fire and Rescue Department. Gilbert Wayne Rubin, 66, of Forsyth, died in his residence at 2:10 a.m. on Friday, April 8th. Memorial service to celebrate Gil's life will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, April 13th at Grace United Methodist Church. Family will greet friends 1 hour before service time at the church. Memorials, if desired, may be made to the New Life Pregnancy Center. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangements. Louise Rigg, 86, of rural Lovington, died at 2:16 a.m. Monday, April 11th, at Sullivan Rehabilitation and Health Care Center, surrounded by her family. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, April 14th, at Schrader Funeral Home in Arthur, with DJ Smith officiating. Burial will follow in the Arthur Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Memorials are suggested to Harbor Light Hospice or Sullivan Rehab and Health Care Center. Ricky Rick L. Singleton, 56, died Friday, April 8, 2016, in his home. He transitioned peacefully in the presence of family members. At his request, a family-led memorial service celebrating his life will be held at First Church of God in Christ, Wednesday, April 13th, beginning at 12 noon. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is assisting the family. We'll continue on now with an article on page 3. The headline is Save a Life Tour Visits Meridian, and this was written by Justin Kahn. The dateline is Macon. Samantha Carroll already tries not to text when she drives, but Monday's visit to Meridian High School by the Save a Life Tour provided a handy reminder. Carol, an 18-year-old Meridian senior, was one of the first to try the Text and Drive simulator, in which students try to read and send a text while driving down a street. Quote, "It's very seldom that I do it, usually just answering my mom if she asks me to stop at the grocery store on the way home," Carol said. "But seeing this definitely shows you how quickly something bad can happen." Andrew Tipton, Save a Life team leader, began the program by introducing a short film. Quote, "It's not graphic. There aren't a lot of blood and guts," Tipton said, "but it is hard to watch emotionally." The film told the story of a young man who had killed two people while texting and driving, and included the statistic that 100,000 accidents per year in the U.S. are caused by texting. Tipton then told the crowd, "I like that video, but the problem is, sometimes it doesn't work. People always think, that won't happen to me." Tipton, 29, said that's what he thought growing up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. But his mind was changed last year when he returned to his hometown to attend the funeral of a former high school girlfriend who had died while driving, drinking, and using her cell phone, also killing her boyfriend and crippling a young child. If she had known her actions would hurt a 7-year-old kid, she never would have done that, Tipton said. The drinking and driving simulator was on the left side of the stage, and the texting and driving simulator on the right. Students filled out a survey and signed a pledge form before taking the wheel of a representation of a car interior while viewing the road, complete with traffic, buildings, and pedestrians on video screens. The vehicle in one simulator had delayed reactions to mimic the reaction time of a drunken driver. The delay increased more the longer the student drove. 15-year-old Ian Carnahan was the first volunteer for the drunken driving simulator. After a couple of minutes, Carnahan drove into the wall of a building. "Get off the sidewalk, Ian. You're going to kill somebody," a student yelled out. Quote, "I think a lot of people who drink and drive say, 'I can do this. Don't worry. I've seen a lot of people do this,'" said Carnahan, who has been driving with a learner's permit for 6 months. "This really shows you that you can't." Carol's texting and driving simulation ended just as badly. "My steering wheel isn't quite as loose. When I thought I was turning a little, I was turning a lot," Carol said. "I ended up in the grass 98% of the time, then pulled onto a 4-lane highway, so it was awful." U.S. Representative Rodney Davis and the Illinois State Police were part of the It Can Wait program by AT&T held at Moroa Forsyth on Monday, at which students witnessed the dangers of distracted driving on a virtual reality simulator. We turn now to this article on page 5. Ameren plans to cut rates, written by Tony Reed. Ameren, Illinois, plans to lower the cost for having electricity delivered to Central Illinois homes and businesses. The utility says it will file a delivery rate request on Friday, covering 2017 charges that, once approved by the state's power system regulators, will cut electric delivery rates by $14 million. And the news gets even better. The cost of buying natural gas continues to plummet, and the latest 4-cent per therm drop in the commodity's price will see new savings that kick in this month. The utility says the price reduction will be worth $28 a year for most customers, or about $2.35 a month. The cost of supplying natural gas has now dropped to its lowest levels since February of 2002. On the electricity front, Ameren Illinois' announcement of a price drop is in stark contrast to the rates that kicked in for 2016, when delivery costs went up between $2 and $7 a month, depending on where consumers lived. Wholesale gas costs had continued their decline, but the delivery rate portion of customer bills for 2016 was increased between $2 and $6 a month. Gas delivery charges are now expected to remain flat for the immediate future, according to the utility. Ameren, Illinois, says the electricity delivery rate decline should not come as a surprise and points out that the rate has been decreased 4 times since 2011, when state lawmakers passed the Energy Infrastructure Modernization Act. The new law gave the utility a faster turnaround time for setting new rates and recovering costs in return for investing more than $600 million to upgrade the power infrastructure. Part of the idea was also to make customer charges more reflective of actual costs, and Ameren Illinois spokeswoman Marceline Love says that is what is happening now with electricity delivery rates. Quote, "The interest rate environment is a little better right now," she added. "We're continuing our investments and upgrades to our system infrastructure, but the lower cost of financing is helping to offset some of those costs, and that is helping to benefit our customers." Craig Nelson, the utility's senior vice president for regulatory affairs and financial services, said customers are getting the best of both worlds. He says the power system upgrades are allowing power to be restored 18% faster after blackouts and saving customers some $47 million a year. Quote, when combined with expected lower electric supply costs, our customers will continue to see stable prices for an advanced energy delivery system, Nelson said. Just below that article, we find this. High schooler intern gets a taste of real-world work at St. Mary's. This was written by Valerie Wells. Working at St. Mary's Hospital this semester for an Inspired Futures internship has helped Kara Outlaw, pardon me, her name is Kara Outlaw, crack out of my shell, she said. Outlaw, a senior at Eisenhower High School, wants to be a registered nurse. She's already signed up for classes at Richland Community College next year and applied for the internship as a way to get a foot in the door and gain some experience before pursuing higher education. Quote, my life plan is to be a certified nurse assistant and then go on to get my bachelor's in nursing, Outlaw said. This is getting to know connections. She hasn't decided what area she'd like to work in, though she said she'd talk to someone in the laboratory at St. Mary's who convinced her to consider a field like that. She was sure she wanted to work directly with patients, but now she's considering options like the lab as well. Quote, I've been in the phlebotomist area where they take your blood, she said. I've taken surveys and I've watched phlebotomists take blood. I moved down to the lab and looked at trichomoniasis slides and we ran tests on a 5-year-old child to see if they had strep throat. She's also working on spreadsheets and reports and seeing a lot of variety in her days on the job. Some things she can't do because she's not certified, said Tina McCoy, director of the laboratory and Outlaw's supervisor, but she can watch and gain experience and knowledge that way. Quote, it's a well-rounded experience, McCoy said. When they first told me I was going to have an intern, I thought, what am I going to do with an intern? Then I thought, budget is coming up and I need to know if we need new lab coats. A lot of the interns do one big project, but she's doing a lot of smaller projects. St. Mary's also had interns last year, the first year of the high school intern project with the Decatur School District, said Denise Smith, Director of Human Resources for St. Mary's. This year they have 8 interns in different areas, and the hospital has been very pleased with them. Internships will continue until April 28th, and the students and business partners will give presentations at a luncheon the first week of May, said Ashley Grained, Distance Learning Coordinator for Decatur Schools. Plans for next year are already well underway, with 63 students signed up for internships, triple the number of the first year. Students receive credit for their participation, spending 3 afternoons a week on the job and attending an early morning class in career skills and preparation. Let's find out what our letter writers are telling Abby today. Dear Abby, cool down before reporting therapist X to APA. Dear Abby, recently, a guy I've known for more than a year decided it would be best for us to part ways. Before Christmas, I had asked what he would like for Christmas. His response was, I don't want anything for Christmas. I want you. A couple of weeks later, he told me the pictures, nightstand, candy dishes, and candle holders he had in my apartment were gifts from him because he loved me. Tonight, he packed everything up and left. I don't know exactly why, but I think it has more to do with his own issues than about me. Abby, I feel I have been manipulated and used. Ironically, this man I thought was a friend is a psychotherapist. While we were together, he would discuss confidential information about some of his clients with me. I think I should report him, but on the other hand, I'm asking myself whether I'm only looking for revenge. Should I leave it alone or report him to the American Psychological Association, or am I overreacting to losing him? I still feel really mixed up. Signed, Vengeful in Minnesota. Dear Vengeful, psychotherapists are not gods, and like other human beings, they can have their flaws. I understand why you would be hurt and disappointed. However, rather than look for revenge, you should consider yourself lucky you didn't invest more time in this flake. As to whether you should report his breach of professional ethics to the APA, I think that for the sake of the patient's clients whose trust he has betrayed, you should do exactly that, but after your anger is no longer raging. The next letter. Dear Abby, I'm wondering if I have an issue of it or if what concerns me is fairly normal. I am 31 years old and have 3 daughters, 2 stepsons, an ex-wife, and 1 current wife. I have been asked most of my adult life, as I'm sure most people have, where do you see yourself in 5 years, 10 years? For some reason, I can't figure out how to answer this question. There are many variables at play, and many lives would be affected by my pursuing what I want in 5 to 10 years. I can't say I'm going to be here doing this in 5 years because I have no idea what might change. Do I need professional help? It upsets my wife when she wants to talk about the future, and I can't give her an answer. Signed, Confused About the Future. Dear Confused, some people use the question of where will you be as a method of setting goals. What your wife may really be asking is, are you satisfied with things as they are now? And if not, what changes do you intend to make? If that's the case, it might be illuminating to ask her what changes she would like you to make. There's a very practical question to Dr. Keith Roach today. Dear Dr. Roach, I have a question regarding medical providers. In the past, when I have made an appointment to see my physician, I have seen the physician. Lately, when I make an appointment to see my physician, I am seen by a physician assistant. The problem for me is that I have built up a relationship with my physician. I have no relationship at all with the PA. The other problem I am having is that I pay a lot of money for health insurance to be able to see my physician, not the PA. I have told them before that I prefer to see the physician, but I am still seen by the PA. Am I being overly sensitive on this issue, or should I start looking for another physician? Signed, CJ. Answer. In my experience, physician assistants provide excellent care, and I note that you are not dissatisfied with the quality of the care you are receiving. Several studies confirm that both PAs and nurse practitioners provide a quality of care comparable to physicians. To me, your concerns are similar to seeing a different physician in your physician's group when you want to see the provider who knows you and with whom you have built a relationship based on trust. There are many reasons that a physician or other provider might not be available on a given day, such as medical emergencies and personal issues. The main reason I am concerned is that you have asked to see your physician and your wishes have not been respected. It is entirely reasonable for you to want to see your own doctor. If that's not possible, then I would recommend you find a new practice where it is possible. We turn now to the A3 briefs for Tuesday. Accident injures 2. 2 teen boys were taken to Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana on Monday after an accident between a passenger car and an ATV in Oakley Township. The identities were not released, but their injuries were considered serious. The Macon County Sheriff's Office said the 2 teens were riding an ATV southward on Oakley Road while a Ford Taurus was southbound. As the car driver prepared to pass, the ATV turned into its path at the intersection of Oakley Road and Sheets Road. The 2 passengers on the ATV were thrown from the vehicle upon impact. Authorities received a call at 3:50 p.m. The driver of the Taurus, a 16-year-old boy from Mount Zion, was not injured. The Macon County Sheriff's Office Accident Reconstruction Team was investigating. Oakley Road was closed for an indefinite time. The Decatur Youth Symphony Orchestra will present its final concert of the season, 2 p.m. Sunday, April 17th, in the Kirkland Fine Arts Center. The theme of the concert is Join in the Dance and will feature dancers from the Dance Center on several orchestral dances and 2 soloists, Michaela Waddleworth and Josanie White, who were selected as part of the concerto competition. The orchestra is directed by Neil Smith, and admission is free and open to the public. An informal coffee covering Social Security will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 13th at the Decatur Macon County Senior Center, 1430 North 22nd Street. The discussion will be led by Outreach Coordinator Judy Pfeiffer. The event is free and open to all ages. This has been Carol Bond with the April 12th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. I look forward to reading with you again next week.